Welcome to Shattering Myths, devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who know that the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yana. Our number, anytime over the next 2 hours, if you would like to engage us or our audience, is 877-300-7645. But melancholy this morning, this program and the one that we're going to record immediately thereafter for tomorrow, so that there's a new program for tomorrow. Larry and Scott are working together to provide a program for you for Monday. The last group that I will do here in the Central Coast of California as I look over the a beautiful setting. It's a pool in front of me, looking through French doors across the last vestige of green lawn and in this parched state. Probably 100 or so roses that flank it on the left and right. Some chipped sandstone walls and steps. The signature bush, it's called the weed of this community. They're so prolific, but they are nonetheless majestic. But the live oak and then the mountains in the background, silhouetted against a sky. On the west coast, of course, the sun is just now beginning to creep above them, and we have the long shadows, and the contrasts are indeed beautiful. The light literally plays and dances across the long horizon as I look out the window and broadcast this program. And it's been my great pleasure to sit here and speak with you and share these insights over these many years from this beautiful place. But it has been sold, and we have moving vans arriving. In fact, they will arrive as we continue towards the end of the second hour this morning, and they will be here as we record the show for tomorrow. I just hope that they don't move me and my desk as we are broadcasting the show. So it is a mixed feeling here. I am sorry to lose this beautiful place, but we are delighted to leave all of the craziness that is California, that's politically, environmentally. California has got to be as screwed up as any place in the world. It is a beautiful place in terms of what Yahweh created for us here, but man has certainly made a mess of it. And it's also with a big smile in the sense that we are going to be under one roof. We're headed back to Virginia, to our farm there, and en route, we're hopeful to be able to resolve the challenges that have arisen regarding a home that we're trying to buy in Ohio, so that we can be close to our eldest son and his wife, our daughter-in-law, as they bring their first child into their home. So it's grandparents that we're about to become, and that is one of the principal reasons for the move, in addition to the fact that it got worrisome being bi-coastal with us trying to take care of two different homes, and we only bought this home to support our children in the first place, and both of them are gone. They both continued their education on the West Coast, and we wanted to continue to support them and be part of their lives, which is why we bought it. And the very fact that we're buying the home now in Ohio, we're continuing that theme. We enjoy our family. Enough about me. I will share now, turn to the news. I began this story several days ago and didn't get very far into it, and I'd like to continue with it because there's a lot of unique insights into the difficulty that people have trying to understand why someone would want to leave a Western country like Australia, join the Islamic State, why they could view the Islamic State as a godly institution when its behavior is so repulsive. Now, they're involved in the sex trade. They literally kidnap thousands of little girls and rape them. They buy and sell people. They decapitate anyone who won't submit to them. They burn people alive in their homes. They will destroy anything that is associated with the other branch of Islam, Shia Islam, including Shia Muslims, their women and their children. They're mass murderers. They're ruthless terrorists. They are the only Islamic organization that will, on occasion, attack a military institution, although they, like most Muslims, prefer to attack those who are unable to attack them or to even defend themselves. And yet, Muslims around the world will join them as if their cause matters, as if they were godly, as if they were doing something just with all of this heinous, destructive, repulsive, egregious behavior. And so what is it about the religion of Islam that so corrupts an individual that what is arguably the single most perverted organization on planet Earth today, the Islamic State, is viewed as a cause for good by Muslims? And it's a really important question to know. How is it that somebody can be so twisted, so upside down, so confused that they would wish to do this? And in this particular case, this young man chose to be a suicide bomber. He chose not only to be a suicide bomber, to take his own life, but to do so murdering and maiming others. And not just any others. No. Other Muslims. And what you'll find is that they will justify their desire to maim and mutilate Muslims based upon this notion that America in particular is murdering Muslims. So this notion that America's invasion of Iraq, and Afghanistan justifies, and the consequence in terms of is Muslim lives, and there were many that were lost, but they're justified in taking their own life and killing fellow Muslims because America killed Muslims. Now, how in any circumstance can that make any sense? That would be like America saying that, you know, the Japanese killed some Hawaiians while they bombed Pearl Harbor. So what we need to do is find some Americans that are willing to go to the Hawaiian Islands as suicide bombers to kill more Hawaiians to show them that they can't get away with that. But nonetheless, that is what they are doing. So CNN reports a teenage Australian jihadist, having carried out a Islamic State suicide attack, developed his hatred for the West over the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. Now, this is something that back 14 years ago, I said would happen. I used Vietnam as the parallel. And, you know, this is not something that was kept secret that I'm saying, oh, yeah, now I can go back and say I did this, that, and the other thing. No, you know, I did 3,000 hours of talk radio. I wrote many, many thousands of pages of books and published them online and published them in hardback. And countless articles as to the consequence of our invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq before we even invaded. Back during the time we were just considering what we were going to do. I said that if we invade Afghanistan and Iraq, it's going to turn out just like Vietnam in virtually every possible way. And one of the things that I've constantly reinforced is that when you bomb a religious or political adversary, whether you view communism, which was the foe in Vietnam, as a religious foe or political foe is your call. I view it as a mix of religion and politics. Socialist secular humanism is the religion of man. Man becomes God. And when you bomb them, when you use bullets to fight a foe like that, everyone you kill, every bomb you drop, manufactures somewhere between 10 and 100 times more enemy than you kill. Your killing is indiscriminate, but your creation of enemy is not. And I said, in Vietnam, the North Vietnamese would simply point to the sky in villages along the south and say, whose insignias are on those airplanes that are dropping chemical agents, Agent Orange, who are dropping napalm that is designed to stick to your skin and cause excruciating death? Who is dropping the explosive incendiary bombs? Who is scraping you with Gatling guns? What is the appearance of the flag on those airplanes and of those troops and those tanks and those helicopters that are destroying your homes, that are destroying your farms, that are killing your family? They pointed to the sky, and with every bomber, with every helicopter, we manufactured more enemy than we killed. The same is true in Iraq and Afghanistan. This particular young man from Australia that joined the Islamic State and blew himself up as a suicide bomber justified what he did based upon America's invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. And that was the consequence. So what happened in Vietnam, and even before we invaded those countries, I predicted that's what would happen when we invaded them, that we would manufacture vastly more Islamic terrorists than we killed. And therefore, the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, I told everyone who would listen, would be counterproductive. We would squander great treasure, bankrupt the country, and it turned out to be $4 trillion worth of squandering. And we would spill lots of blood. I had no idea we'd spill as much blood as we did. As a direct result of our invasions of both countries, well over 1 million people are dead. It's probably now in the range of 1.5 million. They're dead that would not be dead had we not invaded Afghanistan and Iraq and caused now the civil war between Shias and Sunnis that has spread throughout the Middle East. 1.5 million lives lost as a direct result of a counterproductive move by the United States of America. And there's no one in the United States who has ever apologized for that. And we not only lost 7,000 American troops and another 7,000 American personnel supporting them in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I think those lives matter too. And I've never heard anyone in the Department of Defense, it should be the Department of Offense, or in the White House apologize for the sacrifice of those lives to make a bad situation worse. And yet, that's the reality. But it's not just that we lost those 14,000 American lives for nothing. No, the numbers have been and continue to be that some 80 former soldiers from the Army, Marines, and Air Force that were stationed in Afghanistan and Iraq, or who bombed Afghanistan and Iraq, have taken their lives. If you do the extrapolation based upon the reports, it's very close to 300,000 Americans who were exposed to the stupidity of what we did militarily, who took their lives. They could not handle it. In addition to those 300,000 Americans who took their lives as a result, as a direct consequence of the stupidity of our invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, you have 600,000 American vets who have claimed post-traumatic stress syndrome. That they're, and the syndrome is not the kind that we would attribute to Vietnam, where you're witnessing constantly the carnage of your fellow troops, because there weren't many or nearly as many firefights. And most of the ones that were engaged in were at great distances. People falling back into the mountains and into caves. No, it's over the emotional and moral trauma of knowing that your country lied to you, that the mission was stupid, inane, indeed counterproductive, that there was no way to prevail, that all of that loss of life accomplished nothing, that America's political and military leaders were universally dishonest in their portrayal of what was occurring. It took its toll. 600,000 Americans now that need to be treated with by psychiatrists, psychologists, and mind-altering drugs, who have tried to numb themselves so that they aren't haunted by the hellish consequence of our foolish actions. So many things, consequence of this, of these invasions, including the fact that we broke two countries and we exacerbated the problem of terrorism in the process. We'll be back. This young man in Australia, he was a model. He had lots of friends. He was the antithesis of what the Obaminator said is the thing that will resolve the issues in the Islamic world. He says, you know, we need to be investing in the Islamic world. We need to be partnering with them. We need to have businesses go over there and create opportunity for them. We need to be bringing them here and educating them. Everything he said is the antithesis of what we need to do. He says, because, you know, there's no economic opportunity. They're lured to radical Islam, that then they won't say Islam, of course, but to the dark side, because there's no opportunity, and we need to solve this problem with opportunity. Let's redistribute wealth. No, he was fluent parents, very well educated, had a good job, had his own apartment, lots of friends. As a matter of fact, almost everyone that has left Europe to join the Islamic State, or Australia to join the Islamic State, or America to join the Islamic State, came from, left a very fine situation economically, educationally, occupationally. What the Obaminator said is the antithesis of what's true. We're dealing with a religion here. This is not an economic issue. And the only way to resolve the deadly nature of this religion and its tendency to kill and destroy everything it touches is to disassociate with it, to isolate it, not to integrate with it. No, he did it for the very reasons I said it would be done. That the moment that America makes the foolish decision to invade Afghanistan and Iraq, and of course to bomb Libya, to fly its drones over Yemen and Pakistan, that while we would gloat that we are killing terrorists, the fact is we're just killing Muslims. The fact that Muslims promote 99.9% of the world's terrorism links them to terrorism, but for every one you kill, you manufacture 10, if not 100 more. This young man became a suicide bomber as a direct result of America bombing Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I know that they have a huge hand in terrorism, but I think there's a new bigger player involved. I think we are. I think the United States is the biggest terrorist in the world.
Yeah, when you look at drones, for example, and you consider that drones rain terror from the sky by remote control, killing people who are almost universally defenseless. They don't have a means to shoot down the drone. They don't. They aren't armed at the time that the drone strikes them. They aren't threatening any American at the time the drone strikes them. 100% of them are civilians. We've never used our drones, our predators, to kill those in military units. So we're only killing the most religious civilians, and we're doing so in the most cowardly possible way to inflict the greatest amount of trauma and terror.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, I mean,
who destroyed Afghanistan? Who destroyed Iraq?
Exactly. So when you, I mean, I know what you're saying when 99.9% of when you say that stat,
right.
But I think
a pure terrorist act. But you know, you're right. The United States is a major perpetrator of terror.
You just said it. Why did this guy become? Why did this guy become that?
Because Americans terrorized Iraqis and Afghani Muslims.
Yeah, I mean, so we're creating our own enemy. And,
correct. And who did we empower? What did, if you look at Iraq, Scott, before America's invasion, did you read daily in the papers that you were pretty young at the time, but did you listen to the news and hear, wow, there was a terrible terrorist attack in Iraq today. Saddam Hussein perpetrates great terror on his people.
No.
No. There was only one that could be considered a terror attack that was perpetrated in Iraq, and it was part of the Iraq-Iran war, something that we were sponsoring. As a matter of fact, we were on the side of Saddam Hussein. We supplied the chemical and biological weapons that he used, and the only reason that he deployed them is that the Kurds, who no one likes in the Islamic Middle East, decided that they would join Kurdish Iraqis decided that they would take Iranian weapons and attack their own country, Iraq. And this one village universally sided with the Iranians. And not because they had a religious interest, because one's Sunni, the other's Shia. Just because they wanted to go to war with, because they've always wanted an independent country. And even though the preponderance of them live in eastern Turkey, they wanted their own independent country in the north. And so they went to war using Iranian weapons in the midst of that war when it was essentially a stalemate. And they began to turn the tide of the war. And so Saddam Hussein gassed them. Now, that's it. Today?
Yeah.
How many terrorist attacks do you read in the newspaper today? Aren't there just so many they almost don't even report them anymore unless there's some interesting twist to them?
Honestly, it's to the point where most people are desensitized to it.
Right.
They don't even notice it.
Scores of them a day.
And today in Iraq. Oh, okay. Great. Yeah.
Yes.
I could write you the headlines for tomorrow if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, suicide bomber. Yeah, one after another. New girls kidnapped. Little girls raped. Mass decapitations. Videos celebrating the Quranic blessing of the decapitation. And
to be fair, yeah. I'm a firm believer that if you don't move to stop that, you're condoning.
I don't have any desire for America to stop Islamic terrorism.
No.
If Muslims want to do what they're doing in Iraq and Syria today, the only thing that I would say is, had we not deposed Saddam Hussein, then Islamic terrorism in Iraq and in Syria would be nil. And so we ought not have gone in to those countries and started with our bombers, because if our purpose was to fight Islamic terrorism, all we did is exacerbate it. We made it a million times worse than it was. But the bottom line is, had we done the right thing, which is to quarantine Islam, to disassociate from Islam, and if they want to go off and kill one another, so long as we're not providing the weapons or the motivation, what is that to us?
Fair enough. Yeah, I know what you're saying. And, I mean, the point is that the country I live in does provide the
weapons.
They provide and the weapons incentive.
And the incentive.
They provide the incentives.
Right. We created the motive. We created the means. We are responsible.
I can guarantee you whoever we are helping right now, 3 years from now, will be fighting us.
Oh,
whoever we are helping right now, 3 years
on,
from now,
on both sides, everyone that we're providing weapons to would prefer to kill us with those very weapons than they would kill their religious counterpart. Every single one of them. We're manufacturing. It used to be like with Saddam Hussein. We partnered with him for decades, armed him, and partnered with him for decades. And then we went to war against it. With Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, we partnered with them for decades, and then we went to war against them. With Stalin and with Russia, we partnered with them for a decade or so, and then we later went to war against it. With Mao Zedong, we partnered with him and then went to war against him in Korea. It used to be that we partnered militarily with individuals, empowered them. They became draconian because we picked our friends poorly. And then we went to war against them some years later. Today, with the war in Iraq and Syria, we're simultaneous. You know, we're providing weapons to the very people that we're bombing. I mean, we're doing it at exactly the same time.
I think part of that's
what's so insane about this.
I think part of that, though, is like I've said it before. If they don't have a boogeyman that they can point to and make people believe that this person is actually, they get people to buy into it and believe that this person is a threat, then people are going to start to look at the money that we spend on the military and say, we don't need that. And they have so much money tied into it.
Right.
That
why do you think that NATO and the United States worked with the thugs that used all manner of weapons, including Molotov cocktails, to bring down the properly elected government of the Ukraine? Why do you think that that the NATO countries supplied now $50 billion in military and other aid to the Ukraine? It was without the fight in the Ukraine, NATO doesn't have a purpose. So we reenacted the Cold War with Russia just so we could justify the U.S. military and NATO. Otherwise, it had no purpose.
Yeah.
Exactly right. You know, Lindsey Graham, when he was all but announcing his bid to run for president, said, you know, the big impetus of his presidency, if elected, will be the Reagan doctrine of building a massive military to confront radical Islam. I mean, what didn't he learn about making a bad situation worse and engaging with them in Pakistan, in Yemen, in Syria, in Iraq, in Libya, in Nigeria, and on it goes, in Somalia? Which of those situations did America's military intervention make a positive difference? And which of them did we make a hellacious difference? You know, it's as if we have, as a nation politically, lost our ability militarily to think rationally. As if even the immediate past, even our present, is unknown to us. And we've lost the ability to understand cause and consequence. But yet, that's where we find ourselves. Scott is the furthest from a warmonger, the furthest on the planet from a thief. But during the break, as you were describing the stupidity of the way we deploy our military, where we go in, we depose the leadership of a country, we bomb them back to the Stone Age, and then we leave after having squandered great amounts of blood and coin. You said, you know, if you're going to have a military and you're going to invade, that's probably not the right way to go about it.
But if you're going to be a warmonger, be a warmonger. Be Genghis Khan, not David Khan. You know?
Yeah, really.
If you're going to be it, then be it. Don't tie a bow around it, say you're fighting for freedom or anything like that. Just go the way of the Spartan. We're fighting because we like to fight. That's what we do.
Yeah, and we're going to enslave you, so that's why we fight.
And now,
and we're going to rob you. We're going to be like the Muslims. We're going to be like Tamerlane.
We're doing stuff now to where we're not. If we don't even have to, if we want, we don't ever have to lose another American life in war. We'll just hit you with drones. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first thing that's several issues. One is that what America is doing, which is just mind-boggling, stupid, counterproductive, is to spend all this enormous money using a military that is consistently making bad things worse and America vastly more vulnerable, all while pretending that they're protecting us and providing for our liberty. I mean, you couldn't be any dumber than that. And while economically you are correct that the barbarians of the past were, that was their economics, the first Muslims, you know, for with the case of Islam, for the best part of 500 years or so after Islam's creation, it survived exclusively through that mentality of plunder. That was its economy. Genghis Khan built an economy based upon the use of military to rob people of their possessions. That was his entire economic plan. And while those things are heinous, it makes more sense than what we're doing.
And that's just it. Everything we just said is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all we do.
Genghis Khan was horrible. Kublai Khan was horrible. Tamerlane was even worse. The initial Muslims and their raiders, where they enslaved people and raped the women and killed the men and robbed everyone within camel ride of their possessions and constantly terrorized those who were incapable of defending themselves, was despicable. But is it as bad as what we do as Americans, where we go in on these trumped up illusions and false notions that we're country building? We go in and we break the country, and then after squandering enormous amounts of wealth and blood, we just leave.
We live in a country that has no clue what peace is. In our entire existence, all we've ever done is been at war. There's been very few times.
The first 400 years of America's existence as not as a nation, but from the time that the first European Christians came over here. From that time in the 17th century to today, in the first 400 years. We engaged in 101 wars. That's one war every 4 years.
And now they've figured that they found a loophole. Where, well, we didn't declare war. It's just military action.
Yeah, it's a military action.
Well, that sounds a lot like war.
Yeah,
what is the definition of a military?
It wasn't Iraq's, our invasion of Iraq enduring freedom?
Yeah.
Well, Afghanistan, one of the two. Enduring freedom. Oh, and we then on the military side, that was the political side. On the military side, we called it Desert Storm. It's a hell of a storm.
We've been at war so much that it's now, it's again, we're warmongers.
We call raining hell from the sky shock and awe. And we're so proud of ourselves. We all watched it. We're just, look how mighty America is.
Warmongers.
And we're just warmongers without a conscience anymore.
We're not even good at it.
No.
We're like, if there was a history book written about us, we'd be the laughing stock of warmongers.
As you use the illustration, if what you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. If you have a bomber, everybody looks like every city, every community looks like a target. If you have a gun, everyone is your enemy. That is what we've become. We have ill-conceived weapons that we're deploying, consistently making bad situations worse for everyone.